Today's podcast is sponsored by Zencastr. I use Zencastr to record the Tally Room podcast, and it's an invaluable tool. I record pretty much every episode of this show remotely, with my guests joining me from wherever they happen to be. Zencastr allows us to record with high-quality sound, even if the internet connection isn't the best. It records a high-quality version on the local desktop and then uploads it when the internet connection allows, meaning that the audio the listeners hear is usually better than what I can hear when I'm recording. It also allows for recording video. I use it to be able to view my guests, but you can also record video in 1080p. On one or two occasions, I've used Zoom instead, and you really notice a difference. It's super easy to use Zencastr. I set up a link for a recording and send it to my guests, and we're getting started in minutes. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code TALLYROOM, and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experience as I do for all my podcasting needs. It's time to share your story. Welcome to the Tally Room podcast. I'm Ben Rowie. We are now just a week away from the Tasmanian election, so today we're going to go back to Tasmania and discuss the polls, the electorates, and what to expect on election night. My guest today is William Bowe from the Poll Bludger. Hello, William.
Hello, Ben.
So Tasmania will be electing an expanded parliament at this year's election with 35 members in the lower house for the first time in a quarter of a century. These 35 members will represent the same five electorates that have been used since the early 20th century. When nominations closed, we saw a wave of independents contesting these elections with their own column on the ballot paper, significantly higher than in past elections. And at the same time, the Jackie Lambie Network has come back to contest four elections after sitting out the 2021 election. William, what are the polls saying about whether these new entrants have a chance?
The polls are very encouraging for the new entrants. The Jackie Lambie Network in particular has been polling about 10% in polling conducted during the campaign. And that is statewide when they're only contesting four out of the five divisions. So in the four where they are contesting, they're looking, you know, on average headed for a quota in their own right. And that suggests that they're a strong chance of winning in each division where they're contesting. That would put them on four seats, which in the context of a proportional representation parliament could very much make them a kingmaker. As well as that, the sort of none of the above column is polling more strongly than the combined minor parties did last time. So on top of the Jackie Lambie Network, I think there's a good chance we'll see a couple of independents in the mix. And what we'll have is a very diverse crossbench, neither major party with a majority, and some fairly exciting post-election horse trading going on.
I mean, we don't usually get that much polling for Tasmania, right? I went and looked because it felt like there's been a lot, but actually there hasn't been many polls. There was a YouGov poll commissioned, interestingly, over the Christmas break from mid-December to early January, and then there was an ERMRS poll and a Redbridge poll both in like mid to late February. This stuff should probably be taken with quite a significant grain of salt, right? That these independents and Lambie candidates, it's easy to say, yes, I'm going to vote for them, but we're not talking about a lot of polls, and we haven't really seen yet whether they've been tested about whether that's going to be reflected in actually how people vote.
Yeah, that is true. You know, like Nate Silver in America has done a lot of work on the sort of low intensity contests where you don't get a lot of polling. When you don't get a lot of polling, you don't get a lot of herding. So you tend to get a lot more variation between one pollster and the other. And, you know, you don't get the phenomenon, I think, that we've seen in national polling in Australia, maybe not so much recently, but in previous electoral cycles where, you know, there was clearly a lot of herding towards News Poll, and News Poll tended to be pretty accurate. So herding worked until 2019. You can't really do that in the context of Tasmania. You know, there is no regular news poll. There's no authoritative pollster with a really good track record. You do have ERMRS in Tasmania, which does a quarterly poll, which, you know, means you get more polling from Tasmania than you do from larger small states, if I might describe Western Australia and South Australia that way. Their polling traditionally has tended to be too favourable for the Greens. I think they might have addressed that, though. We've seen three items of polling during the actual campaign period, two of which you mentioned, Redbridge and ERMRS. One was reported in the Mercury with unsatisfyingly little explanatory detail as to who conducted it and for whom. Nonetheless, the results from that poll chimed very well with that. They basically came in bang in the middle of the Redbridge in the EMRS poll. And helpfully, it was a big sample and it was broken down by division. So while you might have your gripes about the lack of transparency surrounding that poll, I think the results of it were pretty interesting.
I haven't really looked so much at the individual seat level polling, but if you break Tasmania up into two kind of sub-regions of the north and the south, you have to include Lyons in the north, even though there's some bits of Lyons that are quite close to Hobart. But generally, it kind of lines up quite well. You do see a big gap, Greens polling much better in the south, Lambie Network polling much better in the north, and also a bit of a divide between Labor and Liberal, that generally the south is a bit more left-leaning than the north. That's kind of consistent with what we've seen in the past. And it's kind of consistent, particularly with how Labor goes when they're not winning elections. When they are winning elections, a lot of the area where they pick up the vote to win a majority is in Lyons, Bass and Braddon, you know, that they win those areas in federal elections when they're having a really good year. But right now that divide suggests Labor has also kind of retreated to its stronger heartland in the south. Yeah, that seems like what's going on right now in terms of that regional divide. And that, again, is a sign that might be encouraging for the Lambie Network if they're not wasting votes in, you know, Franklin, for example, that suggests their vote is probably a bit higher in those northern electorates.
Yeah, that does seem to be the case, particularly in relation to the Jackie Lambie Network. You know, you would imagine that they would win a seat at a bare minimum in Braddon, which is, you know, Jackie Lambie's home turf. You know, I can tell you they're getting a great deal of coverage in the media up that way. And the Liberal Party are running attack ads against them, which obviously tells you something about what they're expecting to happen. In relation to sort of the north-south divide, I've sort of been wondering if the situation you've described, where the north of the state that swings behind Labor when they have the wind in their sails, I have a sort of vague notion that there's a bit of something more long-term going on now that's making that area more difficult for Labor, which is sort of analogous to the increasing divide between red and blue states in the US. You know, this is a sort of low-income, non-metropolitan area that is perhaps moving to the right in a systemic sort of way. And, you know, there are analogies for that on parts of the Australian mainland as well and throughout the democratic world, I think. To the extent that it's the case that when you get a big shift to Labor, that's where it happens, the polls aren't showing that. You know, the polls aren't really all that promising for Labor, except to the extent that the Liberals don't look in any position to recover their majority.
You could also describe that as a bit of a rural-urban divide, although, you know, Bass is mostly Launceston, so it's not really quite right to describe that as a rural electorate. But
Bass is, as you say, Launceston makes it a different kettle of fish from Braddon and Lyons, which are the two electorates that did sort of fit the bill that I just described.
All the same, it is a trend we've been seeing. The federal government now is the most urbanised Labor government ever. The Liberals losing ground in the inner cities on the mainland. All of these things kind of fit together. I mean, if that trend was to continue, that would make things very hard for Labor in Tasmania, because in the end, Bass, Braddon and Lyons make up, you know, 3/5 of the country. And it is a PR system, so you can win a majority by winning big in the south more than you lose in the north. That's true. But in a case where it's relatively even, in the end, you need a majority in 3 out of 5, and there are not 3 out of 5 electorates in the south.
Yeah, and if Labor are in a position where, you know, they can't stitch together majorities in their own right anymore and they become dependent on the Greens, then it becomes a bit of a vicious cycle for them because, you know, having to deal with the Greens is pretty poisonous for them in Braddon and Lyons in particular.
Yeah, and I mean, this has been a story in the last few days that Labor's been running, naming myself and Kevin Bonham actually, and linking to articles of ours, kind of running scare campaigns, telling people don't vote for the Greens or the Independents or the minor parties or whatever. And there is an element there, but it is also the reality now that probably Labor will need to work with others if they want to govern. And I know it does make it difficult for them if they're seen to be dependent on the Greens or whatever, but the Greens are not the only force at work here. And I think there's also questions about how well you build those relationships before an election, because in the mainland, it seems like Labor's often much better at building those relationships with the crossbench than their Conservative opponents. But it doesn't seem like in Tasmania they have much appetite for it.
You know, it could be that the Jackie Lambie network, if it becomes a semi-permanent sort of force, will be useful for Labor in that regard. You have an alternative hypothetical coalition or parliamentary support partner that isn't the Greens. And obviously the Jackie Lambie network could jump either way. My feeling is that they will probably fall behind whichever major party has the most seats. So far as the polling looks at the moment, that's, you know, very likely to be the Liberal Party. But I suppose a lot can happen in 2 weeks.
All right, so let's go through the electorates one by one. You know, Tasmania always has the same 5 electorates. At a federal level, Tasmania always having that minimum 5 means that they don't tend to have really dramatic redistributions. We don't see enormous growth in the outer suburbs of a city, meaning that electorates are having to be redrawn. And because the state electorates use the same boundaries, we always have these 5 stories to talk about. So you and I have a lot of experience thinking about these seats as kind of coherent entities through many Tasmanian state elections and federal elections. Let's start with Bass. So we mentioned Bass. It's a northern electorate, has a reputation as being kind of a rural, more conservative area, but a large proportion of the electorate lives in the city of Launceston or in the sort of suburbs around it. At a federal level, it has a reputation as a key marginal seat. The Labor Party has won Bass on many occasions, but it also has a reputation for kicking out first-term MPs a lot. There's a lot of former federal members for Bass who then go on to have a state career in the overlapping electorate. It has been a strong Liberal area, but it's probably been the best seat for the Greens outside of the South. And it could be good for Lambie, but generally the polling in the past at elections and in opinion polls has been that Lambie has generally been stronger in Braddon than Bass. And Lara Alexander, who is an independent member of parliament, former Liberal, is a representative for Bass, but she has quite a low profile. William, what are your thoughts about Bass? What will you be watching there?
The results at the last 2 elections have been 3 Liberal and 2 Labor, so the Greens haven't been breaking through there lately. You would imagine that the increase from 5 to 7 will give them one of the extra 2 seats. So the question after that is what happens to the 7th of the seat, if I might put it like that. Lara Alexander is a wild card. I really have no idea how well she will do. She is one of the 2 independents who quit the Liberal Party last year and cost it its majority in doing so and inspired Jeremy Rockliffe to call the election. She was the weakest performing of the Liberal candidates when she wasn't elected at the time, at 2021. She ended up entering Parliament because of, I want to count back after previous members quit. 2 of them, actually. 2 of the 3 elected Liberals from 2021 quit, and she was one of the people elected on a recount. So far, her status as a vote winner is very much unproven, and I guess that she would struggle. The other possibility, of course, is that the Jackie Lambie network wins the seat. This is, as you say, probably a less good electorate for them than Braddon. But if that polling is accurate, you sort of intimated that you think that maybe the polling is being a bit generous to these minor parties and sort of other none of the above categories. That's probably true. But with the lower quota, they're certainly going to be competitive. And my feeling would be that you would get a result. There are 3 Liberal, 2 Labor, 1 Green, and that last one is up in the air. My money would probably be on the Jackie Lambie network. Maybe Labor could get it. Maybe, you know, there's some independent is flying under my radar. But I would think that the most likely result is 1 each for Greens and Jackie Lambie and 3 for Liberal, 2 for Labor.
My thoughts on the polling are that, you know, when people are being asked, they're asked in general about the concept of an independent or the concept of the Lambie network. But when they come to vote in their election, the actual major party members are able to differentiate themselves and stand out as individual people. And the independents will also have to, and Lambie, the Lambie candidates generally don't have much of a profile. Lambie herself is not running. And so it will become a question of, do I like this particular independent? I think it's quite possible there'll be people in one electorate who, you know, I live in Bass. I would have voted for one of the Clark Indies if I lived in Clark, but I don't live in Clark. I live in Bass and I don't like any of the Indies here. I live in Clark. I live in Franklin. I like some of the Northern Indies, but they're not on the ballot here. And so, you know, once you divide the state up into those electorates, some of those people end up not liking the particular independent choices they have in their seat. I think that's all it is, but we'll see. So Alexander polled 511 votes last time, which was 0.8% of the total vote. So long way behind any of the people who was actually elected at the election. And that makes her stand out from John Tucker and David O'Byrne, who are the other sitting independents who were elected as members of their party. O'Byrne in particular, but even Tucker, both polled substantial shares of the vote themselves and got elected in their own right. So, you know, Alexander May probably has picked up a bit of profile from being an incumbent, but I think she's still a long way away from that. The other independent of note is Jack Davenport, who is an ex-Green. He was the lead Greens candidate in 2021 and, you know, did okay, ended up being the last one knocked out but lost by about 30% of a quota to the Labor candidate. And the Greens put out a statement clarifying that he'd announced he was running as independent, that he'd contested the Greens pre-selection and had not been successful in that pre-selection. I think in the case of the Greens, they choose one candidate who is their preferred candidate that they will campaign for, and that was the contest he lost, and then they get more candidates later. So yeah, there's a couple of those worth watching. For what it's worth, in my blog post that went up on Monday, my estimate was I thought the 2021 result with the bigger parliament would have been 4 Liberal, 2 Labor, and 1 Green. So I'm kind of treating that as the status quo effectively that we're going off would be an extra Liberal and an extra Green. But I think that prediction of the Greens and the Lambie Network winning those two seats is quite plausible. Moving on to Braddon. Braddon that covers the northwest of the state and goes down the west coast. Cities like Burnie, Devonport, places like that. It's definitely one of the most rural electorates, and it does actually stand out as the strongest electorate for Jackie Lambie. If you look at her Senate vote over her 3 Senate contests, it's substantially higher in Braddon than even in Bass and Lyons. There's not as many prominent independents running in Braddon. Maybe it's partly that Lambie's presence is clearing the field. Craig Garland is the only independent with his own column on the ballot. Garland is someone who's run a few times before and polled respectably, but not got elected, run at both the state and the federal level, but definitely has a link to Braddon. What are your thoughts on Braddon?
Yeah, I think Garland I will be keeping an eye on because he got 6.1% last time as an ungrouped candidate, which, you know, is a very difficult position to be on the ballot paper. Now he's sort of probably worked out that he needs his own column and he's got one. He has been around the block at a number of federal and state elections with varying degrees of success, but he did get over 10% at a federal by-election. So, and he's a very distinctive character. So he will be interesting. I think, you know, I said before, and I think you agree with this, that the Jackie Lambie Network are pretty definite here. I'm not sure who their candidates are, but as you say, this is ground zero for that party. So I certainly think you'd expect to see them getting one of the seats, and it's then a question of how the other 6 go. The Greens have been very weak, particularly in recent times in Braddon. They'd need to turn that around to be in contention, even with 7 seats up for grabs. So I think that would leave you with a number of possibilities as to how the 6 seats go. It could be 3 Liberal, 2 Labor, and maybe Craig Garland getting up. If Craig Garland doesn't get up, that poll suggested that the more likely result is 4 Liberal and 2 Labor, which is sort of consistent with the recent form of Braddon. Labor have done very badly in Braddon at state elections over the last decade. The 2014 election was 4 Liberal, 1 Labor. Labor got back a seat at the 2 elections since. But, yeah, this is not only the weakest seat for the Greens these days especially, it's the strongest seat for the Liberals. And, you know, the only one where I think they look like they could conceivably break the threshold of getting 4 out of 7 seats, which they need to do in 3 different places to win a majority. You know, they need to do it in 3 places. I think this is the only place where they can. And even here, it's far from certain.
It's interesting when you look at the historical record of the relative strength of the Greens across the state, across the decades. You know, as we've seen the left doing better in urban areas, we've seen it in terms of the Labor-Liberal fight, but we've also seen it in terms of the Greens, right? The Greens have consolidated their support in cities, lost ground in the outer suburbs and the country. And in Tasmania, it's meant that Clark and Franklin have become stronger for the Greens. But if we had single member electorates in Tasmania, that's the kind of trend that could have helped the Greens break through in an electorate in inner city Hobart or something, the way they've done in Melbourne or Sydney. But because they have PR, it doesn't really help them that much. It just makes – maybe they could win a second in Clark, but it means that they just make those seats safer while falling further away. And in a blog post I did last week, I compared the Greens vote in 1998 to 2018. You know, they're both some of the worst elections the Greens have had. They just barely cleared 10%. But in 1998, well, first of all, Christine Milne, who was the Greens leader, she represented Lyons. She polled 10% there. Wasn't enough to get elected with the shrunk parliament, but she polled respectably, whereas they polled 6.5% in Lyons in 2018. They polled 8% in Braddon in 98. And then in 2018, they polled 3.6. So that has then meant that the vote in what was then called Denison, the vote in Franklin, has gotten a lot higher, but it's meant that that difference has meant they would have to do a lot better to win seats in all five electorates. And to be honest, I suspect their chances of a second seat in Clark are better than their chance of a seat in Braddon or Lyons. So there's been that real big geographical shift as that probably that north-south polarization has gotten bigger.
It sort of goes back to what I sort of said earlier about, you know, the increasing rural-urban divide and, you know, the increasing divide between metropolitan elites and, you know, the more conservative people on the land that is defining modern politics increasingly. When I was discussing that earlier, I framed it in purely Liberal versus Labor terms, but I think increasingly there's a sort of cultural enmity towards environmental politics in places like Braddon, you know, and it was always tougher terrain for the Greens than, you know, inner city areas. But, you know, it does seem that they had a certain basis of support that's evaporated over the last two decades.
I'm actually reading a book called Why Cities Lose by Jonathan Rodden, who's an American political scientist, but he also tries to cover how it works in the UK and Australia and Canada and countries like that, and spends a lot of time talking about how that urban-rural divide has increased and why that has led to often the left losing elections because their vote is too concentrated, which is not an issue in Tasmania because they have PR, but I highly recommend it. I'll include a link.
Well, I've just made a note to read that book.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And then we come to Clark, formerly known as Denison. This is the electorate that covers inner city Hobart, the city of Hobart and the city of Glenorchy on the western side of the Derwent River. It's generally been a very progressive electorate, but Labor actually went backwards a long way their last election, I think partly because of independents encroaching there. At the last election, there were two strong independent campaigns in Clark, and frankly, apart from maybe Craig Garland in Braddon, there weren't really any other strong independent campaigns elsewhere. It was all about Clark. The Liberals won two, the Greens won one, Labor won one, and Glenorchy Mayor Christy Johnston won the last seat, knocking off former Hobart Deputy Mayor, but also former Liberal Speaker of the Parliament, Sue Hickey, who'd become an independent. Yeah, it's a strong area for the Greens, as I've said. They actually do have quite a strong second candidate named Helen Burnett. If they were to ever win a second seat, this is the kind of scenario I could imagine that happening in. On the other side of the aisle, Elise Archer was by far the strongest Liberal at the last election. She's now quit in a situation that wasn't particularly friendly with her party. Indeed, at a certain point earlier in the campaign, she announced plans to come back and run as an independent, which would have been really harmful to the Liberal Party in Clark, but then withdrew due to health reasons. And we've also got Josh Willey, who is a Labor member of the upper house, quitting his seat a few years early to contest Clark as well. What are your thoughts on what might happen in Clark?
As well as everything we've heard just then, obviously Andrew Wilkie is the federal member. So there's clearly an appetite for independent representation in Clark. Sue Hickey only just failed to win a seat in 2021 on top of Christy Johnston, which would have been pretty remarkable. Two independents out of a five-member district. That raises the question of whether two independents out of a seven-member district becomes plausible, and Sue Hickey is back in the race. I understand she's actually on Glenorchy Council now, whereas earlier she was, I think, Deputy Mayor of Hobart. So maybe she's sort of done that to raise her profile in the interim and sort of cover both ends of the electorate.
No, she is. She's the Deputy Mayor of Glenorchy.
So, maybe that's, I'm reading too much into that, but it might have been an interesting strategy for her to pursue if she did have her eyes on winning a seat in an expanded parliament. Time will tell with that one, but, you do have to, contemplate the possibility that you do end up with two independents out of seven there. And that would make the crossbench particularly eclectic. The poll that I mentioned that did have a breakdown by division suggested that that is indeed a high possibility. There was a very high others vote going on in Clark. I think if that were to happen, that leaves the question of what happens with the other five seats. And it is plausible, as you say, that the Greens could win a second seat, which they've never done before. It wasn't a plausible thing for them to happen when there were only five members, I don't think. I think at very strong elections, they were half hopeful of winning a second seat in Clark under the five-seat system. There's a myriad of potential outcomes here. I'm not really sure what would be the implications of a second seat. I doubt that they'd be reducing either of the major parties to one seat, but I could be wrong about that, but I doubt it. So I would imagine that the range of possibilities here is, on the one hand, you get two each for Labor and Liberal. You get one for Green and two independents, or alternatively, you get two Greens and one independent. That would be my feeling of what likely outcomes are there. I might be missing something. The Jackie Lambie Network are not running here, and I suspect they wouldn't be all that competitive if they were. I think they've probably chosen wisely. But unless there's some other independent that I'm missing, there's Louise Elliott, who is a Hobart councillor. She seems like a conservative liberal to me, not a right populist. I imagine she's had some sort of Liberal Party connection in the past. She seems like she ought to, but she's fallen out with the Liberal Party if she was ever part of it to begin with. And maybe she's got enough of a profile on Hobart Council to make some sort of a splash.
Yeah, Louise Elliott, I think, has been particularly prominent as being like an anti-trans campaigner and stuff like that on Hobart City Council.
There is another Hobart councillor, I should mention, Ben Lohberger, whose main deal is his opposition to the UTAS campus at Sandy Bay moving to the CBD. I wonder if that's too niche an issue, but maybe it's a bigger deal in Hobart than I realise.
What I think is the status quo result, what would have happened last time with seven members, is two Liberal, two Labor, both those independents and a Green. So I think we are looking in that kind of zone. It's probably the electorate that is least dominated by the major parties. And that is a particular thing that really hurts Labor when they're trying to get that majority, because they would need to be running up the numbers in the South to overcome their Northern weakness, but they're doing anything but that in Clark. All right, let's move on to Franklin. Franklin's the Southern electorate. It covers the outskirts of Hobart on the western side, as well as the whole eastern side, the Derwent River, the Clarence Council area. And then it also kind of stretches out into the rural kind of south of Tasmania, usually a pretty progressive area, but it's got a history of electing some prominent Liberals. Probably there's three names of interest there. David O'Byrne, who had been a very prominent Labor member and indeed was briefly the party's leader after the last election, but is now an independent. Tony Mulder, who is a former Upper House MP, Conservative, is contesting as an independent. And Eric Abetz, former Liberal Senator, is coming back to contest as a Liberal. What are your thoughts about Franklin?
Franklin will be interesting, if nothing else, for how the Liberal candidates will go. You've got two incumbents who I think are going to struggle for re-election against Eric Abetz and also Jackie Petrusma. Was easily the strongest performing Liberal in 2021. She quit midterm and now she's coming back. And my feeling is that both Eric Abetz and Jackie Petrusma will win seats. And if there's a third Liberal seat, which I think there will be likely to be, will be Nick Street, who is the second strongest performing Liberal and the only remaining Liberal incumbent from 2021. The other Liberal incumbent, Dean Young, I don't like his chances. I think he's going to get squeezed out by Abetz. and Batrisma. So in terms of how the parties go, I think what we're looking at here is 3 Liberal, 2 Labor, 1 Green, and the last seat is a wild card. I would imagine that David Byrne is a strong chance to win as an independent. He briefly became the Labor leader after the 2021 election. The story of the Labor Party over the last 3 years is tearing themselves apart over David O'Byrne. The party leadership, Rebecca White, wanted him out. They didn't want him to be pre-selected, but he remains a strong figure, or perhaps I should say remained now, in the factional left of the Labor Party. His power base is in the United Workers Union, the big left union, and he obviously retains a lot of support and a lot of sympathy there. What brought him down was a harassment incident going back to 2007. And I think that a lot of people on the Labor side of politics are, you know, forgiving of him and feel that he's been hard done by. But, you know, the extent to which this is the case requires more local knowledge than I possess. So if I were to take a punt, it would be that he wins that seventh seat and we get a result of 3 Liberal, 2 Labor, 1 Green and him. The other alternative is maybe the Jackie Lambie Network wins a seat rather than O'Byrne. But if I had to have my money, I think it would be on O'Byrne.
And that's probably the most interesting place to see the dynamic of intra-party competition, of the potential of a sitting member losing their seat to a member of the same party, which otherwise you would think the chances of seeing that are much reduced to this election just because there's extra seats available, right? So the competition for those seats is a bit less. You know, even where a party's not doing well, they're usually in a position where maybe they can gain an extra seat just because there's more seats to spare. But yeah, you're right. We could see at least one, maybe two of those incumbent Liberals lose their seat to their fellow Liberals. And then we finish with Lyons. Biggest electorate, covers the middle of the state. Culturally, it's usually seen as a little bit more northern, but it does include kind of places that are both near Launceston and near Hobart. John Tucker, who was elected as a Liberal in 2021, is running for re-election as an independent. The Liberals will want to win back his seat. It's also quite a strong area for the Lambie Network and Jane Howlett, who is a Liberal member of the Upper House. She was due to face re-election in May to her Upper House seat, but has quit early to run for the Lower House as well. Where do you see Lyons going?
In order to answer that question well, I think you really need a good idea of how well John Watt Tucker is likely to do, which I don't have. He got 6.5% and was the third elected Liberal in 2021. That's pretty solid. And I would need to know how well received his decision to quit the Liberal Party was, whether he's just sort of seen as a splitter or whether he's succeeded in making himself a champion of local causes in the way in which he cut ties with the Liberal Party. If he's managed to do that, you know, he's a very strong show, and that sort of raises the question of whose expense his seat comes from. I think if he wins, you could be looking at 3 Liberal, 3 Labor in his seat. The Greens are a shot in Lyons, which I don't think they are in Braddon, but I think it will be a close-run race for whether the Greens end up with one of the seven seats, and that could change the calculus in various ways. So I think the Liberal and the Labor parties are going to be reasonably finely balanced. I think if one won more seats than the other, it would be more likely to be Liberal than Labor. But, yeah, the complication of John Tucker makes it hard for me to call, and also the fact that I'm not quite sure how good the Greens' chances are. So, there's a range of possible outcomes there. I haven't mentioned the Jackie Lambie Network. There's certainly a possibility. So there's really nothing about Lyons I'd state with confidence. I really think it's a bit of a lottery.
Okay, so both of us are going to be covering the Tasmanian election on election night, as we both will be covering tomorrow night the Brisbane City Council election, as well as maybe a bit more the rest of the state, but mostly Brisbane. What do you think people should be watching for on the night? Like, what's the first place to be looking to kind of get a sense of these trends?
Well, it will be difficult to say because, you know, Tasmania is so regionalised in its electoral behaviour that I think you'll need to focus on a a couple of different locuses to see what's happening. You know, you'll need to get a sense of what's happening in rural areas. And very separately from that, you'll need to have a sense of what's going on in Hobart. I think every electorate is pretty much its own ecology at this election. So this sort of idea of looking for litmus tests, that's going to be very difficult to do. It will be a very interesting night. You know, I imagine we'll be getting different signals from different places. And we won't really have a clear idea of where things are headed until a fair way through the night.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. I think early on it'll be a question of, like, are particular candidates viable? Like, is Lambie looking like she could at least, won't even be a question of how many seats are they going to win, but are they at all competitive and serious?
Yeah, that's a good answer. You will get a sense early on, are the Jackie Lambie network fulfilling what the polls are saying? They didn't in 2018 when they did run. They didn't in 2021. They sort of crashed and burned during the campaign in 2018, and that was evident in the polls. We haven't seen that. They do seem to have been holding up pretty well in the campaign so far as the polls are concerned. But as you say, it could be that, you know, they aren't able to harness support behind particular candidates, and as a result, the polls are flattering them. Relatively early on the night, I think that much will be clear. Is the Jackie Lambie network living up to the hype?
Absolutely. So that's about it for this episode of the Tally Room podcast. Thank you, William, for joining me.
Thank you very much.
So you can find me at the Tally Room this Saturday night covering the Brisbane City Council elections and next Saturday night covering the Tasmanian election. William, where can people find you?
You can find me at pollbludger.net on both of those evenings. I hope to be having live results, touch wood, pollbludger.net at both next Saturday's elections and the weeks after.
You can find this podcast on your podcast app of choice. If you like the show, please consider rating or reviewing us on iTunes. You can follow the Tally Room on Mastodon at tallyroomandmastodon.au or like us on Facebook. This podcast is made possible thanks to the generous support of our donors on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/tallyroom. Information about this podcast is available at tallyroom.com.au and you can email questions or feedback to thetallyroom@gmail.com. Thanks to Krista Bro for writing the music you hear in this episode. Once again, thanks for listening.